Welcome to the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. This week, the podcast revisits Scotland as I talk to Kate Devlin, who is political correspondent at The Herald. We talked about a range of issues related to Scottish politics, including just how bad things are for Labour at the moment, whether Kezia Dugdale is doing a good job as leader of the Labour Party in Scotland. We talked about issues such as Trident, tax credits, and the potential prospect of a second independence referendum in the near future. We also discussed how the upcoming EU referendum might impact on Scotland, and whether in the rest of the country, UKIP might experience an SNP surge of their own, even if in the event that Britain remains in the European Union. So without further ado, I'll take you over to our conversation. I started off by asking Kate just how bad things were for the Labour Party. So Kate, thanks for joining me. We'll be talking about the Scottish Labour Party conference later. But before we do that, I just wanted to get your impressions on the situation Labour finds itself in Scotland at present. I mean, it feels very bad. Would you think it's very bad as well?
It is possibly about as bad as you can get. And Labour politicians will tell you that as well. They'll admit as much. One of the best guesses seems to be that Labour will struggle to hold on to any of the constituency seats that they currently hold in the Scottish Parliament. They won't, by the way, be the only party struggling to do that. But when you think that the Scottish Parliament was set up with a kind of slightly strange and unusual PR system, in part to try and prevent a one-party state, that party at that stage would have been the Labour Party. It does show just how far they've fallen, and how far they've fallen really since this time 5 years ago. Because in and around November 2010 was when really everything started to shift for the Labour Party. And I had Labour MPs at that stage telling me it was fine. The polls even were showing that they were going to do quite well in the Scottish Parliament elections in 2011 and probably win them. And that's, it was kind of in and around November, but certainly between kind of November and February, a huge change happened. Labour started to free fall in the polls. The SNP started the gradual ascent that then went in, went kind of supersonic after the independence referendum. And this is where they are now. But I mean, if you told some Labour politicians this 5 years ago, none of them would have believed you.
And what do you put it down to? Because obviously the independence referendum was a seismic shift in Scottish politics, but at the same time that was lost by the Yes side. So there must be something else going on in terms of why Labour has declined so significantly in popularity. As you say, it used to be a one-party red state, if you like, in Scotland, and now it's a kind of one-party yellow state.
And I think some very thoughtful Labour politicians would suggest actually that that was part of the problem. And they would say whether it was true or whether the perception managed to get through. But this idea that Labour was taking Scotland for granted was incredibly damaging. They didn't recognise it early enough. They probably should have recognised it long, long before the 2007 Holyrood elections. And they certainly didn't do enough to counter it. I mean, that said, absolutely nobody predicted that we would have an independence referendum, even in their lifetimes, let alone within a few short years, that it would be called by David Cameron, that, you know, support from independence would go from around 1 in 3 to 45%. So, I mean, we are really living in very, very changed times. But certainly some of them would say that there were longer, more strategic problems there before the referendum.
There are some people that say that the Scottish Labour A team, if you like, went down to Westminster and left the B team behind. And maybe, it's easy to forget that back in 2010, you know, the Prime Minister was Scottish and the Chancellor was Scottish. And yet, 5 years later, you've got one Scottish MP, haven't you? It's a very significant change.
And sometimes I think that does a disservice to, the very talented Labour politicians in the Scottish Parliament. You know, big beasts like Donald Dewar. But, you know, other politicians who came through the Scottish Parliament system itself. But again, the perception was certainly there. And that was certainly seen as one of the problems.
I mean, let's look at the recent Scottish Labour conference. I mean, you know, life goes on after May, and you know, Labour in Scotland has to try and find a way of fighting back at least as best it can. I mean, what were your impressions of the recent conference and how Kezia Dugdale did?
I thought she did very well. She's clearly starting with management expectation. I think she's had the phrase about wanting the Labour team to at least be clapped as it comes off the pitch. I mean, that's not setting your ambitions very high. But, you know, they recognise where they are. And I think that's really, really important for any political party. And some of the political parties that have done so well in recent years, when you think of the SNP, have long actually been very good at expectation management. Possibly you could argue so were the Tories in the last towards the general election, though, whether they were really aware of how well they were doing remains to
be seen. They say they were, but I think there's a degree of scepticism.
Well, indeed, yeah. Indeed. But she did manage to do a few other things that were carefully aligning Labour and trying to get a little bit of cut through with the electorate. Policy on tax credits, which actually has kind of dominated Scottish politics for.
So what is that policy? That's essentially that she's going to protect Scottish people from the worst excesses of that?
Yes, indeed. And effectively make up the money. They won't actually be able to overturn Osborne's policy. But effectively they could by putting the money back into people's pockets. Mm. And it did manage to put a little bit of pressure on the SNP. How were they going to respond to that kind of policy? The other big thing that she did was that she was very keen to have a debate on Trident, which of course has now left Scottish Labour with a different policy from the rest of the UK. And there are some within Scottish Labour who are very relaxed about this. They think that this is a very helpful thing towards the election, that it's managed to neutralise one of the SNP's big arguments against them. It's also managed to throw off the shackles of this idea that they're just a branch office of London and they'll do whatever London tells them to do. And, you know, look, they've been a bit rebellious and they've gone off and done something differently. There are others who worry about what actually gets through to the public. And, of course, there's the old adage about people don't vote for parties that are fighting with each other.
Mm. I was going to ask about Trident because it seems to be that it's not necessarily an issue that's going to be top of the Scottish voters' minds. And it's going to be things like the economy, isn't it? It's going to be maybe the independence question and whether there'll be another referendum. I mean, how do you see the Trident issue in Scotland? Is it important or is it just something that symbolises a greater sort of party brand for Labour and the SNP?
It's always incredibly difficult, isn't it, to try and pick apart What are the issues that people actually vote on? What really, you know, when they get into the polling booth, what is it that they actually make their mind up on? We know what they what they say when they're canvassed. We know what they tell pollsters in the run-up to the election. But I find it very difficult to try and figure out what it is that people are actually voting for. And then when you add into that, all the evidence suggests that Scottish public opinion on Trident is actually quite divided, and much more divided than you would think from the MPs at the minute, because of course we have the SNP group who are opposed to Trident, but also Scotland's only Labour MP, Ian Murray, has always been anti-Trident. So, I mean, you know, you've got 57 out of 59 implacably opposed to renewal. But a poll last year showed that Scotland was pretty evenly divided on the issue of renewal. And of course, that becomes a lot more complicated than whether you just think whether the UK should have nuclear weapons or not. Because, of course, it's about whether the UK should have nuclear weapons potentially quite close to your house.
Mm.
But then, of course, there's an awful lot of jobs involved.
I was going to say, presumably, you know, the Scottish Parliament wants to keep those jobs. Do they really want to move? Let's say there was a compromise and Trident was moved south of the border. Is that really something that the Scottish Parliament wants?
No, and they certainly wouldn't want to lose it that way. I think the argument is certainly more about scrapping Trident overall rather than seeing it.
To keep the jobs, but maybe do something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Rather than just see them kind of lost to Milford Haven or whatever. But an awful lot of people either work in the supply chain, work in the base itself, or know a member of their family who does. And so it all gets a bit more sticky about, you know, in an ideal world, would you want nuclear weapons? But would you actually really want somebody you know to lose their job?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you sort of touched at the beginning of this interview about the fact that the SNP was likely to do extremely well next year, and that Labour might lose every constituency seat that they have. I mean, do you see it as that wipeout then in next May? And where would you see the independence question going from then? Because presumably that is the SNP's raison d'etre, so to speak. So, you know, if the SNP does have a majority next time, presumably there's a second referendum, is there?
It was a pool.
It's a big call for the SNP, isn't it? So when do you call the second one?
It's a very difficult question. I mean, the polls certainly suggest that they're going to do incredibly well. There was one a couple of weeks ago which suggested that they were starting to slip to the shockingly low figure of 58% of the electorate. And at the same time, their closest rivals, Labour, had seen a bounce of 2% to go to, you know, the shockingly high figure of 22%. Wow, yep. I mean, it really is, all the evidence suggests that it's going to be off the scale. That said, the caveat has to be what happened 5 years ago, the last time we had the Holyrood elections. And as I said, everything changed really in the 3 months in and around Christmas. So I think that just slightly has to be borne in mind. What's actually going to happen does really depend on the vagaries of the Scottish Parliament system. And lots of very smart academics are trying to kind of figure out exactly what happens if you do very well in a constituency vote, but you also do extremely well on the list. You know, because the list system is supposed to help the smaller parties.
It's supposed to balance out the...
supposed to even things
out. First past the post mathematical foibles.
But it wasn't necessarily designed for a system in which any party gets 60% of the vote. Mm. And certainly lots of SNP politicians feel that certain regions of Scotland, they might be able to bust the system and ensure that they do very well in the constituency and they're very well in the list as well. And so what you end up with is the potential, certainly at least, that we're going to again get something that was never supposed to happen, which is a majority in the Scottish Parliament. And you're right, that this brings in the very quite sticky question of an independence referendum for it.
I mean, I heard Professor John Curtis saying recently that, you know, his view, and I think he's mentioned this on this podcast before, was that the SNP are only going to go for that again if they start seeing polls that have maybe 60% in favour, because they think, well, we're going to win it, because if maybe the once in a generation chance of independence wasn't quite true the recent referendum, if you have two referendums that referenda are lost, that is settled for a generation, isn't it? So it's a really difficult choice for the SNP, because ultimately that's what they're in business for. But then if you call it at the wrong time, you might lose that for 30 years.
And they've spent the last 30 years looking at, which is the kind of nearest equivalent, which was the Quebec referendums. And the lesson, certainly the SNP politicians have taken from this, is exactly what you say, is basically you get two shots at this. And if you fail the second time, and let's never forget, Quebec came within a whisker of it. Mm. You know, it was less than 1%. They were so close. And yet afterwards, the PQ have the Parti Québécois, the nationalists in Quebec, have really struggled in elections. And certainly in the last regional elections, the mention of independence saw them do disastrously. They did so bad that their leader, Pauline Marois, was forced to resign. And so, you know, this is kind of burnt into the brains of SNP politicians. They really understand how high the stakes are for, as you say, their biggest policy and their raison d'etre. And so they're going to be extremely cautious about going for it without being very, very certain that this time they might win.
And that would imply to me that that's probably not going to happen anytime soon unless there is a dramatic shift in the polls on that issue.
I think the polls are going to be poured over, studied very carefully. Movement is what they're going to be looking for. I think there will be other things that they look at as well, you know, a kind of sense of change happening. Polls before the independence referendum kicked off showed support for independence pretty much at a steady 30% for years and years beforehand. So they weren't really giving an indication of where the independence referendum ended. And so this has been taken on board by the SNP. And I'm not saying that they're not going to be studying polls, but I think other things will also feed into whether they think that there is enough of a change in the mindset of the public that they might just get it through this time. But of course, getting it through this time means that you'd have to think that you would, you know, have a chance of getting to 60.
Mm.
Because then if it falls off to 50, you're fine.
You're still going to win.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, returning to Labour, I mean, it's easy to forget, just, I mean, we talked about it a bit at the beginning, just how far they've fallen, both in terms of the Scottish Parliament, but also Westminster as well.
Mm.
Presumably, the days of them dominating Scotland in Westminster parliaments are done. I mean, it's very hard to see how Labour gets back to where it was. I mean, what do you think? If you were in the Labour Party, put your Labour hat on. I mean, what do you think they can do from now on? Is it just a steady war of attrition to try and break down the SNP? I mean, where do you see Labour's future?
I wonder if they perhaps should be looking at Quebec as well, because after the first independence referendum, the PQ again went soared in the short term. Mm-hmm. And went through the roof in the polls and did extremely well in the next election, but then have obviously suffered in the years after that. I mean, whether that takes a second referendum or not, I couldn't possibly comment. But I think the interesting thing is that that these things are not forever. Labour's dominance of Scotland was also not forever. So things can change, and things can change very rapidly in politics.
So looking ahead to 2020 then, I mean, what's a good result? I mean, clearly Labour aren't going to get 40-plus seats, but you know, there must be something, you know, Kes will suddenly be getting, there'll be a target, won't there, of what she thinks might be achievable and what isn't.
Yes. And it's very difficult to set that target now. It's going to probably be only about a year before the general election, before she's even really able to tell where the party is. It'll be incredibly important in order to show a fight back, and at least something is happening. It could also be incredibly important for the result itself. Obviously, Labour needed an extra 50 seats in England as well, even if it had saved all the seats in Scotland to come anywhere near in the general election.
At the very least, it has to sell the prospect of a Labour-SNP tie-up of some kind, doesn't it? Because that does seem to have had an impact on the wider general election in England.
It seems to have had a huge impact on the wider general election. The problem they're going to face is that the Conservatives and Downing Street are already planning to use this SNP-Labour coalition idea in exactly the same way.
I mean, why would you change?
Why would you change it? It worked extremely well. It terrified lots of voters across England, which is where most of your voters lie. And it was the thing that, you know, really helped to solidify the Tory vote. They've got absolutely no reason not to deploy that again. And Labour are going to face exactly the same problem. They need to start thinking now what the answer to that question will be. And the problem they face is, again, one of the same problems that they faced this time, is the message to Scottish voters and the message to English voters can end up cutting across each other.
Mm.
You know, so Scottish voters were kind of a bit insulted that Ed Miliband was rejecting their votes. And English voters were terrified that he would do a deal with the SNP. And so where any Labour leader goes from here... And that is going to have an effect on the number of seats that they get on both sides of the border.
And I suppose who that leader might be in 2020, because a lot of people will still assume that Jeremy Corbyn won't be the person that leads Labour into the 2020 election. Who knows? We'll wait. We'll kind of wait and see. But I guess the other way of looking at this as well is that if that Labour leader, whoever it is, was to say, no, we're going to do a deal with the SNP, and to try and placate those people in England and say, look, I'm going to manage that. We're going to do a deal.
Mm.
That leaves Scottish Labour in limbo, doesn't it?
It's a huge problem for Scottish Labour. I mean, it's the argument that Labour MPs were making from Scotland in the run-up to this election, which is, why then would you vote for us? If he's going to do a deal and the SNP are currently more popular than we are, what you're doing is you're just telling Scottish voters, it's okay, just vote SNP.
Mm.
There's no point in having a fight in this constituency. And it's a very difficult problem, but it is one that they are going to face.
And one of the arguments with the SNP, of course, is that, you know, they've been in government for a long time now, and eventually their record will come to the fore, and they'll have to justify that record. And, you know, there may be an in there for Labour to say, OK, well, what have you done on this issue? What have you done on that issue? I mean, what's your perception of Scottish public opinion on that? Because it strikes me that even in areas where the SNP might have a slightly... less favourable image in terms of their record because of the popularity of their brand as a party, and a Nicola Sturgeon and Alex Salmond, they kind of almost get away with it and they're given the benefit of the doubt in a way that Labour aren't. Would you share that view?
Predictions that the record of the Scottish Government are going to come back to haunt the SNP have been made for years now. And I don't see any evidence whatsoever that it is affecting the party at the moment, not least because they're currently 58 to 60% in the polls. any government runs out of time.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't matter really that much how good you are. Eventually, the public decides maybe they fancy a little bit of a change. Maybe they quite like the, you know, shiny new leader of the opposition. And so eventually it does happen. I think what the SNP is very good at is providing that change. So on the one hand, they're a kind of they're quite good at being a government that's very much like an opposition party. You know, they talk a lot of the same language that the official opposition talked on here. And you know, they're forever, you know, kind of saying, no, George Osborne, we'd quite like you to do this.
It suits them to have that external conservative threat, doesn't it, to sort of consolidate their position in Scotland, presumably.
And it suits the narrative as well that they're kind of slightly not quite radical, but you know what I mean by that. But also that they're a kind of, you know, they're an opposition. You know, as well as being in government, and they get to play kind of both sides of that, and they do that extremely well. And then on the other hand, there's also the change as well. So Alex Salmond resigned as First Minister within hours of the independence result, and it was a very, very smart move by the party because it kind of settled the issue. You know, it wasn't Nicola Sturgeon's referendum. She, you know, became the SNP leader, became the First Minister, and it seemed like a new start.
And she gets associated with the victory in May rather than maybe the defeat in the referendum.
Absolutely.
I mean, what do you
certainly
think
about, in the minds of the public, I think that's extremely true.
How important do you think the referendum is for Scottish voters? I mean, I know that the SNP clearly see an opportunity there. If Britain was to vote to withdraw, that would be a very obvious reason to sort of bring the independence question back on the agenda, wouldn't it? I mean, do you think that is something that would really maybe that could be the magic bullet that swings Scottish voters behind the idea of yes?
Yes, absolutely. All the polls suggest that it could be. Though, surprisingly, there is more support for leaving the European Union in Scotland than you might think from certainly Scottish politicians of all colours, actually. And it doesn't look as if public opinion is really that different north and south of the border. There's a couple of points in it, but not really that different. However, if it is indeed an extremely close vote and
Scotland votes remain
and as a result of the Prime Minister's policy, he's accidentally taken the United Kingdom out of the European Union. You can see a scenario where it would certainly galvanise opinion behind Nicola Sturgeon, who's always been very, very strong on this issue. And interesting, it was one of the issues where the SNP struggled during the independence referendum was to kind of square this circle of Europe to try and reassure voters that they would stay inside the European Union and not even have maybe this kind of year or two outside while the application process went through if they became independent. And, you know, certainly they appeared to persuade some people, not persuade others, but it was a kind of lingering issue the whole way through the independence referendum, which does suggest the strength of the issue should it come to it in an independence referendum. I think for all the parties at Westminster, the independence referendum should be a real wake-up call to just what happens whenever a large section of your voters votes against you on an issue like this. I mean, we think in and around 1 in 3 Lib Dem voters voted for independence, in and around 1 in 3 Labour voters voted for independence. And you've seen that both of those parties have really struggled after this. An awful lot of Tory voters, an awful lot of Labour voters are going to be voting to leave the EU. I know Labour are very much trying to ensure that, especially in very anti for Eurosceptic constituencies, that they have lots of allow lots of voices from within the party on both sides of that issue, and that's something that they've learned from the Scottish independence.
It's interesting, isn't it? Maybe UKIP in England could I mean not to the extent that the SNP were in Scotland, but maybe they could have something of a surge, having lost ultimately their raison d'être, to use that phrase again.
Yeah.
They could end up with a surge maybe in the north of England or in Tory heartlands as a result.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said,
who knows, but it's certainly possible, isn't it?
It's absolutely possible. Probably not going to be the kind of huge number of seats that the SNP has got, but it's absolutely possible that people who have been highly politicised by a very binary, emotional, and possibly incredibly bad-tempered EU referendum reject the main parties who kind of let them down on this, and search for somebody like UKIP to represent their opinion.
Kate Devlin, thanks very much. That was this week's edition of the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. Once again, my big thanks to Kate Devlin for taking the time to speak to me this week. Some very interesting topics discussed there. I think that there's two that really stand out for me. One is just how important it is that the SNP get the decision right in terms of when they next decide to bring forward the prospect of a new independence referendum. I think it's very, very true that they only really get two stabs at this, at least for the immediate term, so they're going to have to make sure they get that right. But the second issue I am interested in is whether UKIP could lose the battle but win the war, so to speak, particularly in England, but in the rest of the country, after the EU referendum. I think most people would probably err on the side that Britain is going to vote to remain, although that's by far not a foregone conclusion. But it will be interesting to see if UKIP manage to make some significant gains in some Tory heartlands, or maybe even Labour heartlands in the north of England, off the back of doing actually failing to achieve their stated goal of getting Britain to pull out of the European Union, much as the SNP ended up wiping Labour out in Scotland in a Westminster election, and seek to dominate Scottish politics in the Scottish Parliament moving forward, even though they failed to convince a majority of Scots that independence was the right course of action. It's going to be very interesting, and I think these are topics that we'll be revisiting on the podcast in the near future. The music you're about to hear is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. And just so you know, we've got several podcasts coming up in the next few weeks. We're going to be talking about what it's like to run for Parliament, and we're going to be speaking to some people who have done that and obviously stood in May 2015. And we're also going to be talking about the EU referendum in more detail, and there should be some stuff on the US presidential race as well. So plenty to come from the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. If you like what you hear, do leave a comment on iTunes, as long as it's good. And do like and share the podcast with others. We don't get anything out of this financially. It's just good to get it out there. And our listeners pressing play and sharing it with others really does help us boost our audiences. So thanks for all of your support for those that listen. Yeah, and do keep it coming. And we'll be back in the next few weeks with some more episodes. Thanks for listening.